Devaham.
The demigods.
Rishyaha. The great sages.
Padam.
Position.
Vidahu.
Can understand. Jantuhu.
Unintelligent living beings like animals.
Punaha.
Again.
Kaha.
Who?
Arhati.
Is able.
Gantum.
To enter into the knowledge.
Iritum.
Or to express by words.
Yata.
As.
Natasha.
Of the artist.
Kritibihi.
By bodily features.
Vichestataha.
Dancing in different ways.
Durachaya.
Very difficult.
Anukramanaha.
His movements.
Saha.
That Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Ma.
Unto me.
Abatu.
May give his protection.
The translation,
an artist on stage, being covered by attractive dresses and dancing with different movements, is not understood by his audience. Similarly, the activities and features of the supreme artist cannot be understood even by the demigods or great sages, and certainly not by those who are unintelligent like animals. Neither the demigods and sages nor the unintelligent can understand the features of the Lord, nor can they express in words his actual position. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. A similar understanding was expressed by Kunti Devi. The Supreme Lord exists everywhere within and without. He even exists within the heart. Sarvasya chaham riti sanavishto. Ishvara sarva bhutanam videsha arjuna tishtati. Thus it is indicated that one can find the Supreme Lord within one's heart. There are many, many yogis trying to find him. Yana vastita tadgatena manasa pashanti yam yoginaha. Nonetheless, even great yogis, demigods, sages, saints, have been unable to understand the bodily features of that great artist, nor can they understand the meaning of his movements. What then is to be said of ordinary speculators like the so-called philosophers of this material world? For them, he is impossible to understand. Therefore, we must accept the statements given by the Supreme when he kindly incarnates to instruct us. We must simply accept the words of Lord Ramachandra, Lord Krishna, and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and follow in their footsteps. Then it may be possible for us to know the purpose of their incarnations. Janma karma, chame divyam, evam yo veti. You know the rest of this? Tatvataha, tyaktva deham punar janma, naiti mame iti sojanam. It's from the Bhagavad Gita, the 4th chapter, text 9. Very important verse. If by the Lord's grace one can understand him, one will immediately be delivered, even within this material body. The material body will no longer have any function, and whatever activities take place with the body will be the activities of Krishna consciousness. In this way, one may give up his body and return home back to Godhead. So then we have Nayasya Deva Rishaya Padam Vidur. Antu vana korhati gantume ritum yata yata natasya kriti vir vicheshtato durachyanu kramana samavatu. So, Om Aganat Varandasha Gavanjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So, there's two aspects to Krishna's activities. One aspect is completely not understandable, bewildering to us. and the other one can be understood to some extent. So those two aspects are, first of all, how does he do things? And the second aspect is, why does he do things? You understand? So how does he do things? We just find some basic explanations like Parashya Shaktir Vidaya Vashuyate Shpababhagi Gyana Balakriyacha. In other words, Krishna has many energies and they all serve him. And they're all serving him, as we mentioned before, as first-class servants. He just doesn't even have to tell them what to do. Remember I mentioned that in class the other day? Krishna just desires things, up to kama. He just desires things and it happens.
He doesn't even need to ask.
Because they're first-class servants. A first-class servant, you don't have to ask him to do something, and he does it, because he knows your mind. A second-class servant, you ask him. Like I say, Keshav, could you do this? And he'll say, yes, sir. And he's happy to do it. A third-class servant, you ask him to do something, he does it, but he says, oh, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway, because it's my duty. I have to do it. And sometimes the guru has to do that to the disciple. Just, you have to do it. Why do I have to do it, Guru Dev? Because you're my disciple. If you don't do it, you go to hell. That's not a very good relationship, is it? That's forceful devotional service. Anyway, and then a 10th class servant, the guru says, will you do this? And he says, well, maybe in the future. Or he even says to the guru, you should do it yourself, Gurudev. You know, you've got two hands and two legs. You know, Hare Krishna. Take care of yourself. That's a 10th class servant. Or he says to the guru, that's nonsense, Gurudev. Why should I do it? That's a 10th class servant. So there's a lot of 10th class servants, a few 3rd class servants, even less 2nd class servants, and no 1st class servants. So we should become 1st class servants, like Rupa Goswami was, about a relationship to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Manobhishtam. That means he knew the heart of Lord Chaitanya. Anyway, so how Krishna does some things, we can't even figure that out. You know, how does Krishna dance the Rasa dance with all these gopis, you know, 108 gopis, and even more than that? I mean, just how does he do it? You know, just can't figure it out. It's impossible. But the why question, we can figure out to a certain extent. And so there's several divisions of the answers to the why question. One why question, of course, in philosophy, the why question is called teleology. That's a big word for you. That means purpose. The Mayavadis, impersonalists, atheists, they all say the material world has no purpose. Bhagavad-gita says that. That's the impersonalist. No purpose. Everything's happening by what?
Chance.
Just like if you throw dice, you know what dice are? Like Sukuni, he was very expert. Of course, his dice were not by chance. His dice were something called loaded dice. You know what loaded dice is? Loaded dice means... loaded dice, the reason he can control them is they have a weight. They're weighted. They're not equal on all sides. So when he threw them, he could throw them in a certain way. They were actually made from the bones of his father. Anyway, that's a yuck. So he could throw them in a certain way because they had a weight. You know, if something's weighted, it won't just be by chance on one particular side of the dice. You can actually do it in a certain way so it lands in a certain way. So this is called loaded dice. But anyway, chance... There's this whole theory of, you know, probability. Anyone's heard of that before? Like, if you have a coin and both sides are equal weight, what's the probability of...
50%.
And then, let's say you get 10,000 tosses of the coin. What's most likely going to happen? Then roughly half of them are going to be what?
Heads.
And roughly half of them are going to be tails. I mean, not exactly... But, you know, really, that's probability.
There's a 50-50 chance.
There's a 50-50 chance each time you throw.
Yeah.
Like that. So gamblers are very expert at determining probability. You understand? Because it's like there's this thing called a roulette wheel. You ever heard of a roulette wheel?
Yeah.
A roulette wheel... The internet keeps going out here. I guess someone's... playing with it downstairs or something like that. It's not good because I'm trying to broadcast the play. What's that?
Like a basket weave.
Yeah, let me get myself back on the internet again because I want people to be able to see the class. So in a roulette wheel, yeah, someone keeps turning off the internet and then turning back on, and it really throws off. Maybe you can mention in the future that don't mess with the router during class, because
there's no one downstairs.
No one's downstairs? Well, anyway, maybe it's just the company. You should call the company up and yell at them. So anyways, somehow or other, now it's back on. So a roulette wheel is like you have like black and red. You know what? You've seen them before?
Yes.
And then you throw a little ball around.
Oh, yeah. And then it stops at a number.
Yes, stops at a number. So there's, I don't know, how many numbers in a roulette wheel? Anyone, gamblers here?
No,
I don't know. A lot of numbers.
Yeah.
So then you can bet on a particular number, or you can bet on red or black.
And also
there's this thing called the one-arm bandit.
One-arm.
That you pull it down. It's like a slot machine. You put a coin in, and there's a probability. Anyway, so talking about probability. So the atheists say that everything happens by chance. There's no purpose to this world. And even they talk about evolution. You know what evolution is? So evolution, they say by chance, a little one-cell creature was developed. By chemicals coming together by chance. That's not the Big Bang theory. That's something different. That's the creation of the universe. But even the scientists, when they try to combine all these different chemicals, not even by chance, but deliberately, they can't create one cell of life. What to speak of it happening by chance? And there is one of my godbrothers, Sataputta Prabhu, who was expert in mathematics and actually what's called probability theory or information theory. And he showed that it's impossible for a one-celled creature to come about by chance. So, but the evolutionary people say by chance that one-celled creature eventually, you know, developed legs. By chance, and you know, which is even more impossible. I mean, if you talk about probability, it's like 1/10 to the billionth power, or something like that, or 20 billionth power, which means impossible. Just like when I was going to school, we were studying probability theory, and they said if enough monkeys were typing on typewriters, does anyone remember that? That if you had enough monkeys typing on typewriters, you'd get the works of William Shakespeare after a while. By chance. I mean, this is what, when I was studying probability theory in the university, this is one of the things, because I was studying science, and science means also you have to study mathematics. Mathematics is very important, you know. So you had all these probability theory things. So, you know, come on. Monkeys typing on a typewriter and William Shakespeare comes out, you know.
Not possible.
No. I mean, the possibility is so little it's not going to happen. And what to speak of life coming from life or life, you know, or species transforming to other species. It never happens. Like with Darwin's theory of evolution, you know, you've heard of Darwin's theory of evolution. It didn't happen, because you don't have any missing links between the different species. And then even our godbrother, Sataputta Prabhu, and Drutakarma, you know, you've heard of Drutakarma, he's published some books about these things. He's discovered, like, fully formed human beings, not he's, other people have discovered, and he's published in his books about the discovery, fully formed human beings, like, tens of millions of years ago. And when the scientists are saying there were only a bunch of, not even monkeys running around, at that point there were just a bunch of lizards called dinosaurs. You've heard of dinosaurs before? So anyway, so like this whole theory of evolution is based on chance. But anyway, the purpose of the class is not just to talk about that, but it's to talk about what is the purpose of things. You know, so let's talk about the purpose. There's two purposes we're going to talk about. One purpose is the purpose of the material world. And so the atheists, they say there's no purpose in the material world, but they don't see that Krishna's purpose is to actually rectify us. Just like someone may be in prison and they think there's no purpose of the prison. You know, prisoner. They think, what's the purpose of being here? Because they don't see it from the perspective or from the vision of the outside person, who's out, you know, the honest person. The honest person understands that the purpose of prison is to keep those rascals inside, one purpose, so they won't harass honest people, right? I mean, if they didn't have a prison, then we have all these dacoits running around, like in India. And then you'd be scared all the time. Even with the prison, there's dacoits running around. But Krishna is much more perfect than the government here. No criminal gets away with anything. I remember there were so many robberies, the criminals got away. There was this, in England, what was that, great train robbery or something like that? And even recently, they stole from some, these trucks that carry, the armored trucks that carry gold. They stole like several $1 million and they can't figure out who did it. So many times there's mysteries, you know, you hear about all these mysteries, unsolved crimes. The majority of crimes in modern society are unsolved. So it's a good occupation to be a criminal nowadays. If you're expert, it's a good occupation because they're unsolved. But Krishna does not allow any unsolved crimes to occur. You know, if someone is a spiritual dacoit, Krishna's in their heart. It's just like nowadays, people are very worried because the government wants to monitor everybody, right? They're going to put chips in everybody, you know.
Yeah.
They put chips in everywhere, cameras everywhere. Actually, in the UK, there's cameras in every street.
Whoa. Oh, my God.
In London. I mean, there's practically hundreds of thousands of cameras in London, so you can't even, like, blow your nose without going on the camera. So, or you go into these stores, or even Ghanshyam was telling me, he's driving the bus, and how many cameras are in the bus?
Five
cameras in the bus. So if he even like talks on the mobile phone, he's out of a job immediately. He gets brings the bus back, and you're out of a job. So he's like paranoid all the time. Isn't it? You can't just do anything. You just keep your hands on the wheels. Can't talk, you know, nonsense to the passengers, isn't it? You're not allowed to have a conversation. How are you today, you know, John, or whatever.
Hello, and shalom.
Hello, shalom. Get going. You know, so Krishna is like that. He has cameras in everyone's heart. And so you really can't get away with any nonsense because as soon as you think, you know, I would like to be a demon, then Krishna punishes me. Anyway, so, or in the spiritual world, as soon as you think, I would like to be Krishna, then you're gone. You're gone. You don't even have to wait 10 seconds for someone to come and arrest you. You know, the spiritual police, you know, Jai and Vijay, they don't come in with a siren to kick you out. They're you know, like in a bar, they have these bouncers. You ever hear that before? Every bar, you know, if someone creates trouble, I don't know, you've never been in a bar. Neither have I, actually, except to preach. But they have these people who, if someone creates trouble in the bar, you know, they start fighting each other. These big guys, and they bounce you from the bar. So in the same way, as soon as you start to think about possibly creating trouble in the spiritual world, you get bounced from the spiritual world. Thrown out. And then come back, come to the mature world. Anyway, so the material world's a prison. So you're here and you're thinking, you know, what's the meaning of the whole thing? But everyone outside knows what's the meaning. The devotees know what the meaning, and the people in the spiritual world know what the meaning of the material world is. But we don't know because we're here. That's like the criminals. So anyway, so the one purpose of the material world is to keep us there so we don't harass the people in the spiritual world. Another purpose is to rectify us. You know, just like in the prison house, if you behave yourself, you get privileges, right? Did you know about this? There's different degrees of prisoners. It's not that they're all the same. If the prisoner is good behavior, then he gets special privileges. Special privileges means he can go to the swimming pool, the gym, do his email or something like that. And if he's bad, he gets put in solitary confinement. You know what solitary confinement is? That means they stick him in a cell, he can't see anyone, and they pass the food under the door through a slit in the door or something like that, and he's stuck in this stupid room because he's been a bad prisoner. So the same, it's true. So that's to rectify them, you know, the punishment. We talked about how the parents sometimes punish the child to rectify them. I guess we mentioned that the other day. So that's the purpose. So anyway, that's the purpose of the material world. But even harder to figure out is, why does Krishna do certain things in the spiritual world? I mean, Krishna's activities in the spiritual world are completely bewildering for people who are not Krishna conscious, or even people who are not very spiritually advanced. I mean, let's say, take the example of when Lord Ram banishes Sita. I mean, it's very hard to understand, isn't it? You say, what? He's God, and he throws his wife away just because of some washerman? You know, come on. I mean, if some washerman started to criticize any of you, like Navadvipa, if some washerman said, you know, wife doesn't obey you enough or something like that, you just get rid of her. Would you send her away? No. You'd probably hit the washerman or something like that. So here's God. He can get away with anything he wants. You know, nobody can tell them what to do. And if they do, you know, they get the chakra cut in the head off. And some washerman says, you know, I don't think that Sita's so chaste. You know, who knows? She was in someone else's house. You know, he was just using that as an excuse to mistreat his own wife, actually. And Lord Ramchandra heard that, and he sent Sita away. So it's hard to understand that, isn't it? Why would someone do something like that? And so the reason, I mean, I'll give you the reason, is because he and Sita were undergoing this thing called Vipralamba Seva, Vipralamba, which bring, you know, this is a pastime. So we're talking about pastimes. It's hard to understand why the Lord does certain pastimes. But it's to actually bring Sita and him closer together when there's separation. Even in the material world, absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? When there's separation between husband and wife for some time, and the man is off on some business trip, the wife is thinking, when will he come home? And when he comes home, you know, you wash the dishes. It's not as sweet a relationship when he's home, right? When he's not there, she has his picture, and he has her picture, and they're thinking, when can I be with my sweetie pie again? So, or Priya, you know, to put it in the Indian context. When can I be with Priya? But or when can I be with Swami? Swami is, of course, what the wife calls the husband, my master. So, of course, sometimes it's reversed. The woman becomes Swamini. Because that's the name of Radharani, of course. Swamini. The husband calls the wife, oh, Swamini. Oh, my master. So it's hard to understand the pastimes of Lord Ram like that. And even Krishna, I was thinking about this, Krishna's pastimes are even harder to understand than Lord Ram's pastimes. I mean, Krishna's God, all right. So let's take some of his Vrindavan pastimes. Let's take a pastime that was told by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So this is an interesting story. You like this story. Once upon a time, Krishna was with Radharani in the forest. And Radharani's mother-in-law and sister-in-law, that's Jatila and Kutila, they were suspecting that. So they were running to the forest, to the bower. Bower means like an enclosure in the forest where you have different trees and everything, like trees and bushes. It's like a hidden place in the forest. Kunji Bihari, you know, that same thing. So they were running to see if they could catch Krishna with Radharani. So, of course, Krishna was warned, she's coming. The old lady is coming. So what Krishna did is he was very tricky. He ran out of the bower, and then he put on clothes so he looked exactly like Radharani's husband. You know, Abhimanyu. We mentioned Abhimanyu before in class. And so then he catches his mother like that, his Abhimanyu's mother, not Krishna's mother, who's Jatila, and he says, "Mom, where are you going?" And she says, "I'm going to catch that rascal Krishna with Radharani." And Krishna, who's acting like Abhimanyu, says, "Yes, tell me what happens. I'm going to stay here, and you, if you find them like this, then we're going to do something about it. We're going to go to Kamsa and make a complaint and get Krishna arrested." All right, so Jatila goes to this bower, and of course Krishna's no longer there because he's dressed as Abhimanyu hiding in the bushes, right? And so she goes there, and she says, "Where's that rascal Krishna?" And she sees Krishna's necklace on Radharani. She knows something's been happening. And she says, she actually smells Krishna there. She says, "I smell Hari." And of course in Sanskrit that also means a lion. And so she's meaning Krishna. So she says, "I smell Hari." And the gopi says, "Where's the lion? There's a lion." And she gets really angry at the gopis. The gopis get really angry with her. And like that, and they just like yell at her, "Get out of here, you old buzzard," or something like that. And then, well, of course, Radharani doesn't say that to her mother-in-law. The other gopis say that. And so she runs back, sees Abhimanyu, and says, "Abhimanyu, something." That's the alarm, wake up. She says, "Abhimanyu," it's actually Krishna, it's not Abhimanyu. You know, Krishna dresses Abhimanyu. So she says, "Abhimanyu, this is what's been happening." And Abhimanyu says, "I'm going to go to Mathura and report this to Kamsa. So you just stay, go home right now." All right, so he makes believe, he hangs out in the forest for another 3 hours, makes believe he's gone to Mathura, then comes back home and says, "Mom," it's actually Krishna, "Mom, I actually went, and Kamsa's coming with all of his soldiers and everything like that, and they're going to attack and, you know, arrest Krishna. And so, but I've heard that Krishna is going to come here to the house in the meantime. And when he comes here to the house in the meantime, he's going to come dressed as me, you know, disguised, making believe he's me. So you, let's all go in the house, and if he comes, you attack him." So Krishna is in the house with Radharani. Yeah. It's a nice story, isn't it? So Krishna is in the house with Radharani and enjoying, and then the real Abhimanyu comes back. This is, part of the story is told in the Nectar of Devotion. This is a story told by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And Jatila and Kutila, they're standing on the roof throwing things at the real Abhimanyu. "Get out of here, you rascal, we're going to beat you." And the real Abhimanyu is thinking, "Boy, mother and sister have gone crazy." And then Krishna's enjoying in the house, in Abhimanyu's house with his wife. Anyway, so this is one pastime. And these pastimes I described are bewildering. It's hard to understand, you know, why Krishna's doing that. He's God, you know. So why can't he just, why does there have to be an Abhimanyu? He can just get married, you know, or stay with Radharani all the time. And then there's another interesting story told by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Just two stories for the children. Another interesting story is that Jatila and Kutila, they didn't want Radharani to meet with Krishna. And of course, Radharani was going every day. This is better than a Bollywood movie, isn't it? Radharani, if you hear these things, you don't want to watch Bollywood movies. Radharani was going every day to cook for Krishna because she had that benediction from Durvasa Muni. Do you remember that? That anything she cooked would be sweeter than nectar, and anybody who ate it would never get sick. So that's why we say in the temple, pause. That's why we say in the temple that the kitchen is Radharani's kitchen. Right? So, anyway, so getting back to the point of the phone call. So they prohibited Radharani from going to cook for Krishna. And what happened is that instead Radharani was cooking things at home, and they were having Dhanishta, who was Krishna's cousin, bring the food to Krishna. But Radharani was just so feeling Krishna's separation so much, and she devised a plan with her gopi friends. And the plan she devised is that she made believe that she was bitten by a snake and dying. So Radharani was just like completely unconscious, also feeling separation from Krishna. And her friends ran to Jatila and said, you know, Radharani's been bitten by a snake, what can we do? And Jatila was thinking, what can we do, what can we do? And then some people suggested that actually there's Krishna who danced on the heads of the Kaliya snake. He can actually cure any, get rid of any snake. But Radharani began to speak in her unconscious state and said, I don't want that rascal near me. I'll die if he comes near me. Because she was making believe that she, you understand? She was making believe that she had no interest in Krishna. She said, I will never let any man touch me. And so this pastime was going on. And then there was a message that there was this girl who was an Ayurvedic doctor, her name was Vidyavali, visiting Vrindavan at that time, and it was actually Krishna, dressed as a girl. So even Krishna dresses as a girl sometimes. So as Krishna was dressed as a girl, and then he was called to the house as a snake charmer, you know, to get rid of the snake. And so then he was in the room with Radharani. They let him be in the room alone with Radharani. And they were listening in the door. And Krishna was such an expert actor, as described here in this verse. He was like making believe he was talking to the snake that had bit. You know, because to get rid of the snake poison, sometimes you've got to bring the snake. So he was talking to the snake and he said, my dear snake, why did you bite Radharani? And the snake said, I was actually meant to bite Abhimanyu, but I wasn't able to kill Abhimanyu. He said, why were you meant to bite Abhimanyu? The reason I was going to bite Abhimanyu is that his mother, Jatila, had committed an offense by not allowing Radharani to cook for Krishna, to use Durvasa Muni's benediction. She also offended Durvasa Muni. So she's meant to die, and the best way to kill a mother is to kill the son, right? It's more agony for the son, for the mother when the son is killed than when the mother herself is killed. And then the snake said, but I wasn't able to kill Abhimanyu because he has a chaste wife, Radharani. So first I have to kill Radharani, get rid of the chaste wife, then I can kill Abhimanyu. And then Jatila outside the door was just like crying, and thinking, what can I do? And the snake said, basically, Krishna was making believe he was the snake also, in addition to being the snake charmer. The snake said, the only way is you can just trust, let Radharani cook for Krishna again, and trust her all the time, never think that she's unchaste. And Jatila was saying, oh yeah, I trust her, okay. And the snake said, who was Krishna, said, repeat after me, I trust Radharani. And then Jatila said, I trust Radharani. And then all these things about, I will always let her cook for Krishna. I will always let her cook for Krishna. And then the snake said, all right, I'm taking the poison away, and Radharani came back to consciousness. And then Jatila was so pleased with this female snake charmer who was actually Krishna, she said, all right, you can spend the night with Radharani on the same bed. So these are some like inconceivable pastimes. So you question, why does Krishna do these things? Why doesn't he just, you know, stay with Radharani and, you know, he's God. He can just kill Jatila if he wanted to. Because, we can understand, because he wants to enjoy these various rasas. We were talking about this before. Not only the conjugal ras and the, you know, parental ras and all these other rasas, he wants to enjoy the flavoring of these rasas by the indirect rasas, which we mentioned before. Like ghastliness, anger, right? Humor. Like Krishna is the most expert humorist. So if we understand that God is the supreme enjoyer and he likes rasagya, he's rasagya, the knower of ras, you understand? Actually, a pure devotee is rasagya too. That means he's a knower of ras. And what is the definition of God? He's the enjoyer of ras, the enjoyer of different tastes. Just like when we go and take prasadam, like last night, you know, there's a big plate. And there's different rasas there on the plate. Of course, not the conjugal ras on the plate or the parental ras or anything like that. Servitor ras on the plate. Anyway, So a different taste, like sweet taste, sour taste, bitter taste, right? All these different tastes. So we try to become the enjoyer of ras like that, like I was eating last night, and then we just end up with a stomachache afterwards. Yeah, just like last night, it was so tasty. I ate a little bit more, and this morning I ended up burping. So when we try to imitate Krishna and enjoy ras, it ends up like in a disaster area for us. But Krishna is the actual enjoyer of ras. So we can understand the why of Krishna's pastimes to a certain extent. That's the point I'm making. Although it says here in the verse, the non-devotees cannot understand the why or how. We can not really understand the how, but we can understand the why of why Krishna does things to that extent. So, that's interesting. Any questions or comments? It's interesting stories, isn't it? Yeah.
Maharaj, earlier in the class you were talking about how when a soul desires to become Krishna, Krishna transfers them to the material soul.
Yeah.
I read that that's because he's simply fulfilling their desire.
That's right.
So how can one desire perfectly?
How can one desire perfectly? That means simply anyabhi lashanyam gyana karma navratam anukriyana krishna nashilam bhakti utabam. According to Rupa Goswami, just desire to please Krishna's senses and no other desire be active at it. It has to come from the heart. It can't just be external. Devotional service is executed with the heart, with the subtle body. And that's how you do it. I mean, by the gradual process of purification, association with those who are pure devotees, you come to the point of that purity. But right now we're mixed. Right now, you know, we have some karma mishra bhakti and jnana mishra bhakti. Sometimes we want to get liberated when the material world gets real miserable. Just like the other day, I was experiencing some pain and I was thinking, get me out of the material world, Krishna. Remember, I was talking about hip pain. I don't have it right now. And I was thinking, Krishna, it's so miserable. I can't enjoy bike riding so much anymore. So please, liberate me so I have a spiritual body. That's actually jnana mishra bhakti. So, our devotion is mixed. So we have to come to the point of shuddha bhakti, which simply means I'm serving Krishna. You know, I just want to please Krishna. It takes some time. It takes a lot of time. Bhavanam janmanamante. After many births, and also, you know, there's another verse in the Bhagavad Gita that Manushanam Sahasreshu Kastidyatatisidya. And out of many men, perhaps one is looking for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows Krishna in truth. So it's a very rare thing. Devotion, that's one of the qualities of pure devotional service, rarely achieved, according to Srila Rupa Goswami. But we can achieve it by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. You know, we serve Srila Prabhupada. A pure devotee, there's no doubt that we can achieve that state. And the best service you could do, or the beginning service you could do, is hearing. Because without hearing, you can't do any of the other processes of devotional service. Shushusho shradananasya vasudeva katharuchi shan mahatsevya vipra punya tirthadashevana. That, you know, we used that word tirtha last night, we were talking about. If one serves the Mahatma by hearing Shradananasha Vasudeva Kata Ruchi, one develops a taste of Vasudeva Kata Ruchi. Jan Mahat Sevaya, serving the great pure devotees in that way, Vipra, a learned person, a Punya Tirtha Nishevanat, becomes very pious and crosses over the ocean of material existence and goes back to Godhead. But we're here because of our criminal activities or criminal mentality. I remember, I think I've told this story before. When I was a new brahmachari, I was getting chastised by some sannyasi. And I said, I didn't do this. You know, whatever he was chastising me for. I said, I didn't do it. I'm innocent. He said, you're not innocent. You're in the material world. Even if you didn't do that particular thing that I'm yelling at you about, you're walking around with a material body. Just like when I was young and went to school, we had this story we read in school. It was called The Scarlet Letter. Anyone ever read that? Scarlet Letter? Anyone? Yeah. Anyway, in those days, people were chaste, and there weren't, you know, people stayed with their husbands and wives. So this was like a morality story we were told when we were young. Once upon a time, the story is, once upon a time, it's not a Shastra story, but once upon a time there was a lady who was not chaste. So what they did as a judgment, not like the Muslims, you know, they stoned them to death or anything like that, they made her wear an A, meaning adulteress, on her, you know, like a big A. And so she had to go around with a red A. That's why it's called the Scarlet Letter. You know, a big A. Can you imagine that? If someone broke the regulated principles, you know, they had illicit sex, big A. If someone smoked marijuana, then a big cigarette, you know, marijuana cigarette. You know, a big I, you know, for intoxication. And a G for gambling. And an M for meat. Imagine if we were punishing devotees and someone said, Maharaj, I've broken the principles. I took some alcohol. So you put a big picture of like a beer on. What's the most famous beer here in Australia? In Fiji, they have what, Fiji Bitter or something like that? So you put a big picture of a beer can on there, and they have to go to Mangalarti with the beer can. So that was the story. That was like a morality story we studied when I was young, you know, the Scarlet Letter. No one's heard of that story? That was from England. It was from England. You should have heard about it. It's not an American story. Anyway, so the comparison is we're walking around with this material body. And this material body is evidence that we're criminals, that we're enemies of Krishna. Pretty interesting, isn't it? So that was the point made to me, and it's a really good point. If someone says, I'm innocent, then what are you walking around with a material body for? Are you a Nityasiddha devotee who's come to preach? No. You're not innocent. What's that? Nice song. So you have to be rectified. So, all right. Any other questions? Because it's getting late. Questions, comments, arguments, problems? No? So it's interesting, isn't it? The pastimes of Krishna. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to His divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.